detailed instructions that God gave Moses and also showed Moses on Mount Sinai for the building of the house where he's going to live, for the furnishings of the house, for the priestly garments and for the priestly induction ceremony, and even instructions as far as the craftsmen that were going to do it and so forth. And so while Moses was up there, though, getting instructions, the people down below were misbehaving. They made the golden calf, and you remember the situation, the problems that that created. And Moses has gone back up and received a new set of commandments because he broke the others. They had really broken them by their misbehavior, and Moses breaking the commandments reflected that. And so now they've got the instructions. What are they going to do with those? And that's what we're going to see. So chapter 35, would somebody read verses 1 through 9?
Then Moses assembled all the congregation of the sons of Israel and said to them, "These are the things that the Lord has commanded you to do. For 6 days' work may be done, but on the seventh day you shall have a holy day, a Sabbath of complete rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death. You shall not kindle a fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day." Moses spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "This is the thing which the Lord has commanded, saying, take from among you a contribution to the Lord. Whoever is of a willing heart, let him bring it as the Lord's contribution, gold, silver, and bronze, and blue, purple, and scarlet material, fine linen, goat's hair, and ram's skin dyed red, and
porpoise
skins, and acacia wood, and oil for lighting, and spices for the anointing oil, and for the fragrant incense, and onyx stones, and setting stones for the ephod and for the breastpiece."
Okay, Moses is giving some further instructions here. In 2 and 3, what's he instructing them?
Rest on the Sabbath.
Yes. I believe this is the sixth time in the book of Exodus that there have been instructions about the Sabbath day. It's very important that they not desecrate the special holy time that God has given them. Not even to build the tabernacle on the special time of God. Really, to me, the Sabbath day is the special time, the tabernacle is the special place, and both of them are holy to the Lord and need to be respected, in the case of the Sabbath day, by resting and not working. And then in 4 through 9, what instructions does Moses give?
To take a contribution.
Yes, to take up this contribution. What's this contribution of and for?
Building of the tabernacle?
Yeah, it's for the building of the tabernacle. What do they contribute for the building of the tabernacle?
Everything it's made out of?
Yeah, exactly. They are not contributing money to buy the materials. They're actually contributing the materials. Now, if you look at the list, you can kind of divide these in categories. What's the first category of things they're supposed to contribute in verse 5?
Precious metals.
Precious metals. And then in verse 6?
Precious fabrics.
Yes, fabrics, cloth materials. And then in verse 7?
More fabrics.
Different special kinds of skins.
Animal skins and acacia wood. And then oil and spices and more precious stones in verse 9. And now think about Moses asking for voluntary contributions of these things. What would you think if you were one of the Israelites and you were being asked to give these contributions? How would you take that? How would you feel about contributing?
Moses just trying to get rich.
Well, you could feel that.
I think under the circumstances, I'd be grateful for an opportunity to give back after God has spared me from destruction, as he said he would do on Mount Sinai.
That's a good perspective. What else? else might you think?
Where am I going to get these things?
They had them, evidently.
Yeah.
Think about what this would mean to you to be asked to give a contribution in this situation. This is not an ordinary contribution. What would this mean?
It's like getting in a new business on the ground level.
Yes. This is
something new.
It's a beginning thing.
And whatever they give is going to become a part of God's house.
Yes. You receive the opportunity to contribute the materials that make the house that the Lord is going to dwell among you in. I think that's a tremendous privilege and honor. You know, I mean, do people ever do things like that? I mean, think about people contributing different things and having their names engraved in a building or something like that. People like that sort of thing, like to feel like they have a part in something. And this is really amazing, a building that God is going to own, live in, and be honored by, and you can have something that you own be a part of that building. So I think this is, from that perspective, a tremendous honor and privilege. We'll see how the people took that a little later. But, from that perspective, I think, boy, you'd want to have a share in that. Maybe that's the way we ought to think about, contributions the Lord might ask from us today. Because when we give a contribution that, say, goes to spreading the gospel or to helping needy saints or whatever, what are we really building?
The house of God.
The house of God, in a sense. Not so much a physical house, but a spiritual house, a family. What a blessing to have something that we have and we own be a part of God's house. So I really think that's a helpful way to look at our giving. We're giving for God's special house. All right, comments or questions through verse 9.
Kind of like buying stock in something, so you like own mm-hmm. a part of it.
Yes. Yeah, you would feel more of an attachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking, my family are a bunch of Dallas Cowboys fans in football, and so my mom was like, super excited to get to meet some of the Cowboys. She met the head coach in Indianapolis, and she was just so excited to be in the presence of the head coach of the Cowboys, and then. She came across the opportunity because they were building a new Dallas Cowboys stadium in Texas. And so she took that opportunity to engrave whatever message she want on her own little brick that she made, and it was put in the foundation of the stadium down there. And that's what I've been thinking about. And I'm thinking, how excited am I when I get to be in the presence of God? How excited am I when I get to contribute to God's house? So
yeah,
it's really interesting.
I guess it all depends on how excited we are about God and His work. It wouldn't mean a whole lot for me to have a brick in the foundation of the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, let me tell you. But for a person who's a big Cowboys fan, that'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And if we really are a big fan of the Lord and excited about His work and the things that are part of His will, then we're going to want to share in that just as fully as we can and count it a privilege. We'll have our hand raised. Yeah, I want to. Send me or use my resources. Other comments or questions?
I do think it's interesting following the chronology of this presentation here, because this is just following the question of whether or not God's going to be with the people. And so the people are primed and ready to give an offering. So when Moses asks whoever is of a generous heart, the people have been scared out of their wits that God is going to destroy them, or that He's just going to send them on their way to the promised land with no help from Him, no physical presence from Him. But now, they're ready to give to God because they've been spared.
Yeah. What a blessing that God is going to be willing to dwell with them after what's happened. Man, if you can share in making that house, you'd want to.
Right. So there are a lot of parallels there with us in the New Covenant. We've been spared. How willing are we to give generously now that we've been shared with that mercy.
Yes. Amen.
And there might be more a feeling of, what am I going to do with this anyway, than we have. You know, we think that this is what supplies, this is what's going to take care of us for years and years and years. And it just seems like that what they are facing and what they're going to be involved in, they might have more a feeling of, this is not what I really need.
I think if we have the right perspective, that's the way we need to look at everything we have here. You know, I mean, lay up for yourselves the treasures that last, not the ones that are easily corrupted, stolen, lost, or forfeited to death. Good point. Other thoughts? All right, how about 10 to 19?
Let every skillful craftsman among you come and make all that the Lord has commanded. The tabernacle, its tent and its covering, its hooks and its frames, its bars, its pillars and its bases, the ark with its poles, the mercy seat, and the veil of the screen, the table with its poles and all its utensils, and the bread of the presence, the lampstand also for the light, with its utensils and its lamps, and the oil for the light, and the altar of incense with its poles, and the anointing oil, and the fragrant incense, and the screen for the door at the door of the tabernacle, the altar of burnt offering, with its grating of bronze, its poles, and all its utensils, the basin and its stand, the hangings of the court, its pillars and its bases, and the screen for the gate of the court, the pegs of the tabernacle, and the pegs of the court, and their cords, the finely worked garments for ministering in the holy place, the holy garments for Aaron the priest, and the garments of his sons for their service as priests.
A call for the skillful men to come and make all the stuff. And, you know, getting all that list right in one place is kind of amazing, isn't it? You know, did you realize there was all this stuff to be made? I mean, you don't really quite see that so much until you actually see this in one place and realize they've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot of stuff to be made. And that's what I have to say about that. Do you have comments and questions on that? All right. Verse 20 to 29.
And all the congregation of the sons of Israel departed from Moses' presence, and everyone whose heart stirred him and everyone whose spirit moved him came and brought the Lord's contribution for the work of the tent of meeting and for all its service and for the holy garments. Then all whose hearts moved them, both men and women, came and brought brooches and earrings and signet rings and bracelets, all articles of gold. So did every man who presented an offering of gold to the Lord. And every man who had in his possession blue and purple and scarlet material and fine linens and goat's hair and ram skin, dyed red and porpoise skins brought them. Everyone who could make a contribution of silver and bronze brought the Lord's contribution, and every man who had in his possession acacia wood for any work of the service brought it. And all the skilled women spun with their hands and brought what they had spun, in blue and purple and scarlet material and fine linen. And all the women whose hearts stirred with a skill spun the goat's hair. And the rulers brought the onyx stones and the stones for setting for the ephod and for the breastpiece, and the spice and the oil for the light and for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense. The Israelites, all the men and women whose hearts moved them to bring material for all the work which the Lord had commanded through Moses to be done, brought a freewill offering to the Lord.
So what are you seeing happening here?
A lot of people were moved
to
bring
the stuff. Yeah. Just what Moses had asked them to do, these men and women and leaders bring the various materials. And what do you see as the key to their bringing these things?
Well, they're excited about it.
They are happy to do it. They're excited about it. It's a free will offering.
Spirit moved them.
Yes. They did it from their heart. They did it, you know, eagerly. There's not a, it's not a pressured thing. There's not a shakedown thing. They wanted to be a part of this. So much better than something where, you know, it's kind of you know, grudgingly given. You know, these people, their spirits moved them. They wanted to do this. And so they freely brought these materials for the construction of the tabernacle and the furniture, the clothing. Comments and questions? Yeah.
Verse 27, when it says the rulers brought the onyx stones and the stones for setting and all of that, that made me think that looking at the list of things to bring, there seems to be something that everybody could bring. I mean, even the lowliest of them could have, you know, goat's hair that could be then spun into the what they needed. But I mean, so there was a place for everyone to contribute something.
Very good. Yes, there was. You know, it's great when everybody can share in a work together. You know, everybody has a feeling of participation, involvement. They didn't all bring the same stuff, but they were able to bring, you know, their stuff.
Of course, they weren't wearing any of their ornaments anymore, so maybe they were more likely to
good point
them.
Yes.
And they didn't have any earrings anymore.
Yeah.
Good they drank point. Those. How that all ties in, but
there's some great contrast between this setting and then some of the great cathedrals that were built in some of the early centuries of Catholicism, where they're selling indulgences in order for the people to contribute, that they're bartering with people for spiritual favors, and here these people are willingly contributing.
Yes,
they're not being threatened at all.
No.
It reminds me of 2 Corinthians 9:8-9,
where they were begging for the favor of being able to participate. Yeah, that, what a great attitude. Is that the attitude we have? We want to. You know, nobody has to twist our arm. We're thrilled for the opportunity. We want to be able to contribute to the work of the Lord and to serve and to give ourselves, first of all, and then to give anything we've got. What a blessing. But so often people don't even look at it that way at all. They don't view it as a blessing. They view it as a, man, I got to do this. Really something to think about.
What's interesting, too, is this period of time where they're building the tabernacle is bookended by periods of grumbling and complaining. When they're working, they're not complaining. But when they stop working, they get right back to complaining.
That's a good point. Much better this than the complaining sections. Other thoughts? All right, 35:30 to 36:7.
Then Moses said to the sons of Israel, "See, the Lord has called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and he has filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and understanding and in knowledge and in all craftsmanship, to make designs for working in gold and in silver and in bronze, and in the cutting of stones, for settings, and in the carving of wood, so as to perform in every inventive work. He has also put in his heart to teach both he and Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach of the tribe of Dan. He has filled them with skill to perform every work of an engraver, and of a designer, and of an embroiderer, in blue, and in purple, and in scarlet material, and in fine linen, of a weaver, as performers of every work, and makers of designs. Now Bezalel and Aholiab and every skillful person in whom the Lord has put skill and understanding to know how to perform all the work in the construction of the sanctuary shall perform in accordance with all that the Lord has commanded." Then Moses called Bezalel and Aholiab and every skillful person in whom the Lord had put skill, everyone whose heart stirred him, to come to the work to perform it. They received from Moses all the contributions which the sons of Israel had brought to perform the work in the construction of the sanctuary, and they still continued bringing to him freewill offerings every morning. And all the skillful men who were performing all the work of the sanctuary came, each from the work which he was performing. And they said to Moses, "The people are bringing much more than enough for the construction work which the Lord commanded us to perform." So Moses issued a command, and a proclamation was circulated throughout the camp, saying, "Let no man or woman any longer perform work for the contributions of the sanctuary." Thus the people were restrained from bringing any more, for the material they had was sufficient and more than enough for all the work to perform it.
Right, one of the issues in all of this is going to be who does it. Who takes care of actually making all this stuff? And who does take care of that?
Holy Evan, because Bezalel.
Yes, now who were they?
They were craftsmen.
They were craftsmen.
He was the son of Uri.
Okay. Bezalel was from Judah, and Aholiab was from Dan.
And they were inspired of God to do
yeah.
that.
Yes, God gave them special ability. His Spirit gave them, you know, special understanding, special craftsmanship, apparently even special teaching ability to be able to instruct others to how to do it. And with them were others, in verse 36:2, that the Lord had put skill in their hearts. So this was not just anybody volunteer will come and do it. It's people who have special skill who the Lord has given further talents and abilities to that do this work. We want it done right. You know, and it's not going to be done right just by people's natural ability. I'm going to have God's Spirit guiding them and directing them in the process. It's God's house. You know, it's furnishing God's house. It's clothing God's special priesthood. You know, you want these things made just right. You know, you've got the pattern, you've got all that, but you want the people who are actually, you know, working with the fabrics and working with the metals and working with the wood and so forth to really do it right, to know how to do it and to do it well. Comments and thoughts about the people who do it. Well, what does Moses end up having to do that you would never have expected him to have to do?
Stop giving.
He has to order the people to quit giving. Why?
There's too much.
Too much material. Isn't that amazing? That is a wonderful problem to have. You know, when they are so eager to participate in this that they give more and have to be told not to. You know, a lot of times we would think, okay, do we really have to do this? You know, could they get by without that? And we're always thinking, what's the least amount? You know, they were thinking that. They were wanting to share, and so they were going beyond what was needed. And Moses had to restrain them. They won't have a place for all this stuff. Great Spirit. That shows you they really loved God. They really wanted to share in this. When they don't say, do you still need some more? I guess I could give some more if you really need it. They're like, Moses, no, please don't give any more. Comments and thoughts on this?
Well, I see them bringing things that are needed. In other words, they're not just a bunch of leftover stuff that they're trying to get rid of. These are things that are needed in the building of the tabernacle.
And God
being asked not to give.
Yeah, and God uses top quality material. So this is valuable stuff. Good point.
See, I could see goodwill telling people to stop bringing stuff.
Yeah. If it was leftover hand-me-down stuff that we just wanted to get out of the, you know, attic. But that's not what this is going to be.
Another layer to this is that they got this from God in the first place. It was, they had gone to the Egyptians and asked them to plunder them. And this was God giving them the gifts that they needed in order to give back to him.
Good point. Other thoughts?
You would normally need a nationwide edict to provoke people into giving or force them to, but they had to issue one to get them to slow down and stop.
Pretty impressive. Other thoughts? Well, we're now actually ready for the building. And so we have this... you know, exciting process, probably more exciting in its result than in reviewing the details, but after a while of reading some of this, we'll talk about why the details. So, it probably wouldn't make a lot of difference where we start and stop here, but let's do 8 to 19.
All the skillful men among those who were performing the work made the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twisted linen, blue and purple and scarlet material, with cherubim, the work of a skillful workman, Bezalel, made them. The length of each curtain was 28 cubits, and the width of each curtain 4 cubits. All the curtains had the same measurements. He joined 5 curtains to one another, and the other 5 curtains he joined to one another. He made loops of blue on the edge of the outermost curtain in the first set. He did likewise on the edge of the curtain that was outermost in the second set. He made 50 loops in the one curtain, and he made 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that was in the second set. The loops were opposite each other. He made 50 clasps of gold and joined the curtains to one another with the clasps, so the tabernacle was a unit. Then he made curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. He made 11 curtains in all. The length of each curtain was 30 cubits and 4 cubits the width, and each curtain, the 11 curtains, had the same measurements. He joined 5 curtains by themselves and the other 6 curtains by themselves. Moreover, he made 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that was outermost in the first set, and he made 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that was outermost in the second set. He made 50 clasps of bronze to join the tent together so that it would be a unit. He made a covering for the tent of ram skins dyed red, and a covering of porpoise skins above.
Okay, what are we seeing them making here?
The coverings.
The coverings and whatever you want to call those, curtains, coverings, for the tabernacle. You remember basically what the tabernacle was?
Pretty sturdy tent.
Yeah, it was kind of a wooden skeleton, you know, not you know, closed in by wood, but kind of if you imagine kind of like framing a house, but not closing it in. And what it was covered by then were a couple of set of inner curtains and a couple of sets of outer coverings. And this text talks about making all of those. You've got first the linen, in 8-13, that was the innermost covering. That's the one you'd see from within the tabernacle. And then the goat's hair went over that. That's in 14-18. And then the outer coverings, the ram skins and the porpoise skins in verse 19. So they make all those coverings. Now, we've already had the instructions for those. We already knew some of that. And now we have the details of how they make them. And you know, you've got the loops and the clasps and the numbers and so forth and so on. Why go into all this detail when we already kind of had gone into this detail when he gave the instructions?
To see that he actually performed the plan.
Yes. I think that's what this does. You know, this really reinforces the fact that they are obeying exactly. Now, one thing different between the instructions and the carrying them out here is that the order is different. And the order here seems to be kind of a logical order when you're going to make this. They first actually make the coverings, and they're going to make the wooden framework to put the coverings over, and then later they're going to make the furniture and so forth. When we actually talked about, you know, when the designs were given, the Ark of the Covenant was the first thing that he was talked about, because that's really the most important element. But you're not going to make the Ark until you have a place to put it. You're not going to just leave it out or whatever. So this is more of a logical process in the construction. Comments and questions? Okay, 20-34.
And he made boards for the tabernacle of acacia wood standing up. The length of a board was 10 cubits and the breadth of a board 1 cubit and a half. One board had 2 tenons, equally distant from one another. Thus did he make for all the boards of the tabernacle. Then he made boards, and he made boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards for the south side, southward, and 40 sockets of silver he made under 20 boards. 2 sockets under one board for his 2 tenons, and 2 sockets under another board for his 2 tenons. And for the other side of the tabernacle, which is toward the north corner, 20 boards, and there are 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under one board, and 2 sockets under another board. And for the sides of the tabernacle westward, he made 6 boards, and 2 boards he made for the corners of the tabernacle and the 2 sides. And they were coupled beneath and coupled together at the head thereof to one ring. Thus he did to both of them, both in the corners. And there were 8 boards, and their sockets were 16 sockets of silver, under every board 2 sockets. And he made bars of acacia wood, 5 for the boards of the one side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards of the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards of the tabernacle for the sides westward. And he made the middle bar to shoot through the boards from one end to the other. And he overlaid the boards with gold, and made their rings of gold. to be places for the bars and overlaid the bars with gold.
So what are we seeing here?
It's the framing.
Yeah, this is the framing of the tabernacle. Again, tremendous detail. Details I don't completely understand, don't need to. I don't think that's the point of this. I think the point is to show they followed in detail God's instructions. Anytime somebody says, well, you know, we're getting the general idea. God doesn't really care whether we follow details or not. Take him back here. You know, if this doesn't show God's attention to detail, I don't know what would. It's all a matter of respect for God. You know, if it's God's house and he gives you the blueprint, what do? You follow the blueprint he gave. You don't say, well, I don't really think it matters that much. Who am I to say that about God's house? If he wants 20 clasps, I'm not going to give him 19 or 21. Let's do it the way he says it. Comments?
I think it's interesting the number of boards. The boards are numbered. That's going to be important later on when they're moving them all the time, because they want to make sure they have the right number of boards and they need to be in the right places.
Good point. People are going to have to be assigned to carry them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is a portable tent now. It's going to be moved from place to place. Good point.
And this, it's you keep saying tabernacle. We're talking about the structure within the fence. I mean, the courtyard, I think they make that later. Is that distinguished, or is that, I think these coverings are for the rectangle structure in the middle, which includes the square, the cube, which was the holy place?
Yeah, if I understood you right, yes.
And then,
I think what we've got, the coverings were for the house itself, not the courtyard.
Okay.
And I think this is framing up the tabernacle itself, not the courtyard. Yeah, that's what I believe.
Because these have the silver sockets.
And gold-covered boards.
And the courtyard has the bronze sockets with
good point.
Silver boards.
There are like 86 boards, and they're a cubit and a half wide.
Yeah, which is wide.
It's a hunk of tree.
That is a lot of lumber. And the weight of that would have been heavy until you covered it with gold.
You guys who are much more construction-oriented can appreciate this and probably teach it much better than I can, so feel free to...
Well, you couldn't buy a board today that wide. I mean, you can't go to a hardware store.
27 inches? 18 plus?
And buy a board if that's...
Really?
That wide. You'd have to have it special. Cut it.
I guess this would take a big tree.
Yeah, at least 27 inches or whatever.
Have any of you gone up to Pennsylvania and seen the tabernacle up there?
Have you?
Yes, it is amazing. The first thing that impresses you is the size. I mean, I just remember thinking that this was a monstrous place, but you go and you see, and it's built according to the pattern, supposedly, size-wise anyway.
And it wasn't as big as you expected.
It was small. So the courtyard was small.
Yeah, like 45 feet long.
I thought about that. You know, you look at the measurements, that's not very big.
It would just about fit inside the auditorium at Avon.
That's probably, yes, that's true.
Okay, cool.
But I think Sarah's point about the diminishing value of the metals is important. The further away you get from God, the less valuable it is.
Correct. Good thoughts. Other comments? Okay. 35 to 38.
He made the veil of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen. The cherubim skillfully worked into it. He made it. And for it, he made four pillars of acacia and overlaid them with gold. Their hooks were of gold, and he cast for them four bases of silver. He also made a screen for the entrance of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen, embroidered with needlework. and its five pillars with their hooks. He overlaid their capitals, and their fillets were of gold, but their five bases were of bronze.
Okay, so we're talking about what here? In 35 and 36?
The veil.
The veil. Where would the veil be? That's correct. Dividing the tabernacle into the cube that was the most holy place, I believe half the size of the holy place. And then in 37, 38, what are we making?
A screen.
Now, what's that for?
Some kind of partition between the holy place and the courtyard.
Yes, exactly. This is kind of the doorway, you know, the kind of the veil or screen that covers the doorway. Comments and questions on that? Okay.
I'm sorry. Verse 35, the cherubim, there are lots of similarities between the construction of the tabernacle and the revelation of John, Revelation 4, and the cherubim that are around. And there are lots of similarities between God's dwelling here and his dwelling later.
Yes, and you had cherubim woven in as, I mean, I look at them as decorative, but they're also symbolic in that veil. As well as the cherubim made of gold that are on top of the mercy seat, you know, sort of surrounding the presence of God. Cherubim seem to almost be like guardians of the throne of God or something like that.
Which I think you made a point about that at the Exodus study when we referred back to Exodus 3, or Genesis 3 at the very end.
Correct.
The cherubim were guarding the Garden of Eden.
Yes. Yeah. And in Ezekiel 1, they seem to have been almost the... the ones that were holding up the throne of God, or, you know, transporting it or whatever. Other thoughts? All right, now we're looking at some of the furniture that's being made in the temple, the tabernacle. Chapter 37, verses 1 through 9.
Melchizedek made the ark of acacia